to the Be Ninjas podcast, where you get an all-access pass to see what happens behind the closed doors of a fast-growing global bookkeeping and financial reporting business.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Be Ninjas podcast. And today on the show, we have Mandy Ellison from the Hands Off CEO. Welcome, Mandy.
Thank you for having me, Meryl.
We always like to get started by hearing a little bit of our guest's backstory. So could you tell us a little bit about your early career and what's taken you to where you are now?
Yeah, so this is my second business. My first business was a graphic design and branding web design company. And, you know, the breakdowns that I had in that business is what actually led me to do the consulting work I'm doing now with Hands Off CEO. And so maybe I'll just give you a bit of the backstory. What led me to do this is that I was at a point in my business where I was really wanting it to run without me, and I wanted it to continue growing and running without me, and it could not do that. And I was 9 months pregnant at the moment, and the timing was pretty awful for me to have to kind of shut the business down because my husband was in this really demanding graduate medical program, and we could have really used the income, but I had to shut the business down to take maternity time, which was really important, and I'm glad I did. But I was really frustrated that I had to do that because I actually knew how to make a company run without me because I had done this as an operations manager in the past company that I had worked for. So I had done that. I had squeezed so much profit out of this business, and I had been able to travel anytime I wanted to. And really, it was just like clockwork. But I had not been successful at doing that in my own company, and it drove me crazy that I hadn't. So at this point, you know, after I had created a number of breakdowns that was very stressful for me right when I was about to bring a child into the world, and, you know, I had a four-year-old as well. You know, there's a lot of breakdowns. I'll just spare you guys the details on that, but it really led me to investigating, you know, what does it take to actually get a service-based business to run without you? So what I did is a lot of research, you know, and actually in a community, that's where you and I connected. Actually, I did a lot of research in with a number of different entrepreneurs, and I started solving problems for people basically, so that I could solve the problem for myself. So I could reverse engineer the system for how I could get the company to run without me. And I learned some things in this process. And one of them was really like, I understand why it didn't work for me before. And it also was exciting for me because I realized where my real key passion was. And I ended up leaving that business, passed it off to someone that I had kind of built up as a partner, sold the business to her, and she's still running it now. But I got off into my next business here, which later became the Hands Off CEO. And, you know, that's how I got to that. It was about 6 years ago, and, you know, the rest history.
And I think I've been a small part of that journey. We connected, as you said, a number of years ago in Dynamite Circle. And I have actually used your coaching services as well in helping me to scale the service business that I'm running. And so that was why I was excited, or one of the reasons I was excited to have you on the show today, was to talk through some of those strategies that you work on with your clients to help them scale your service business, or to scale their service businesses. So why don't we start with, what do you think it is about service businesses that can make them difficult to scale?
Well, what makes it difficult is that the reason why the service is successful is because how it worked is that the business owner had this skill set, and they're like, okay, well, I'm just going to hang on a shingle, start selling it, and now a business is born, right? So you have this skill set that's being sold as a service, and it's growing, but it's really dependent on the owner because the owner was the one who created it. So that's the problem with a service. And what it looks like is solving lots of different problems for lots of different people and in different ways. And a lot of times it's grown through referrals. And referrals are great and all, except for when they are they're not matching the kind of work that you really want to grow into. So, a real challenge with scaling a service is that it can be so bespoke, and it can require such a high level of skill to deliver it. So what ends up happening is that there is not enough money in the business to pay the business owner what they want to make, and then to pay a skilled enough worker to actually deliver the service and still keep the quality good enough, and for the owner to actually have money left over. So what it does is it keeps the business owner trapped in the business if they want to make a good amount of money.
And I've been there myself with my first business was consulting, and it was very difficult to hire someone to do custom accounting services. And that was where I moved into Bean Ninjas and bookkeeping and more of a productized service. But what would you recommend to that business owner? They're the one with that technical skill that someone wants to use. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to hire someone.
Yeah, it is.
Fill that role. What's next for them? What should they do?
Yeah. So what's next for them is to narrow in on what a common problem that they can solve. And I think that there's a mistake that I see happen a lot of times is to jump right to the most scalable solution. And for some people, you know, that's it. And that's what they're going to do. Like with Bean Ninjas, I think it's a great example. With bookkeeping, it's a more scalable business. And I think that for the kind of industry that you're in, I think that is probably a good decision. And just based on your goals and all that as well. But I think that too often service-based businesses will say, well, you know what, I'm just going to, so they follow this reasoning. They say, okay, I want this to run without me so that I can grow the company so that it's like more of a hands-off business, right? So they say, well, you know, what is keeping me so hands-on in the business? Oh, well, it's the strategy. So they say, okay, well, let's strip out all the strategy then. So what that does is now they have a commoditized service, which is becoming increasingly problematic because as we're becoming more global as of an economy, you can go overseas for commodities a lot cheaper. So if you're offering a commodity in a Western country where you have to be paying Western wages, then you're going to be in a lot of trouble because the commodity it's a spiral downwards, and that's really the problem with when you're offering something that there's not a whole lot of value to. So what I suggest to do instead is to flip it and say, you know, how can we offer this service? And we can increase the strategy in some cases, actually, but you can do it in a way where you're actually reducing the amount of time. So what I look at is what does it take for us to first? So I start at instead of saying what's the most scalable option, and that's most definitely a question that does come up, but I start with what would it take to add the most value to your clients? So you start at the very top and say, what kind of outcomes could we create? And by the way, it might not be for your current clients too. You might, and the way it is a lot of times with some clients that I've worked with is that they're not actually working with the right type of clients, and we have to just move upstream a little bit so that they can offer, they can solve bigger problems. So the best way to be able to increase value is just to, look at, you know, instead of saying we're solving six figure problems or sometimes even lower than that, which would be a problem, big problem. So look at, you know, are we solving six figure problems? Are we solving $500,000 problems? Are we solving $1 million problems? And look at like how big of a problem you can solve. And, you know, what is that going to take? What would it take to potentially guarantee that you can add on $500,000 to a company, for example, and that or $1 million or whatever it is, and that might sound a little bit scary, but it's the kind of thinking that is going to push you into really understanding how can we offer the best level of outcomes. I didn't say service; I said outcomes to the to the right people that are going to be able to really capitalize on that value. And when you do that, when you're looking at a value formula, it's pretty simple, right? You just look at, well, you know what, if you want to charge $20,000, you know, then you need to be charging, you need to be generating 5 to 10 times that value for them, for that $20,000. So you do the math on that, how much you need to actually be providing in value for the client. So, you know, then you need to be providing, you know, $100,000 to $200,000 worth of value for that. So, and that's kind of on the low end. Did I get the math right?
I was too busy. You dropped a couple of value bombs there. So I was busy thinking about those.
Because I'm thinking about all the systems that I'm thinking instead of the actual math. So I do math on paper. So if I got the numbers wrong, the whole point is 5 to 10 times value for whatever you're charging.
There was a couple of points that really stood out to me there with what you were talking about. And one was where you mentioned outcomes instead of service. And I think as service business owners, we can get caught up in trying to provide a service to everyone and solve everyone's problems. Whereas when you talked about outcomes, you need to be a lot more clear about what your service or what outcomes or what you're actually delivering and the value that you're providing. So in this example, say I was this particular business owner, I'd gone through that exercise of identifying where I could really add value to clients. And even if they're not my existing clients, I might need to go out and find some new clients. I'm clear about, or I think I'm clear about what those outcomes would be. What would be the next step?
Right. So, you know, after understanding, okay, there's kind of a step before that too, because it's just like, these are the outcomes that we're going to provide. And these are the outcomes we could potentially do provide. And this is kind of an uncomfortable step for some business owners, by the way. So that, and it's definitely something that we've gone through over and over and again in our business too. But what really helps at this point is to understand what does like the top 20% of the clients that I work with, looking at your case studies to help you understand how to do this. Like instead of like averaging out the results for all of your clients, which is what most people do, and say, well, you know what kind of outcomes we can get? Well, it just kind of depends. It depends. You focus on the very best type of clients that you can get results for, and then look at, you know, what is it going to take? What do they need to have in place? Go and then directly go out, reach out to those type of clients that you know you can get a great result for, and then have a more compelling offer for how you can actually get that outcome for them. With a lot of conviction, and then you're now growing a company. You're growing your company in the direction where you can have the maximum profitability and the maximum impact.
And when you just said there, what the clients need to have in place in order for you to have those outcomes, could you give some examples of that? I think that's quite important, because sometimes clients won't be able to deliver value because there's something lacking in their business.
Yeah, I'll use the example of an agency. So for an agency to be able to generate, like, let's say, be able to add $1 million to the company they're working with. So the company they're working with, they're going to have capacity for $100,000 more. For $1 million more of business. They have to have the capacity. They have to be able to scale that, right? They have to, if you're generating leads for them, for example, they might have to have a functioning sales team of some kind other than the CEO, that you might need to have that in place to do that. You might need to have in place, you might also need to understand, do you actually like working with this company? Is this a company that is doing good in the world that you want to help scale? So those are some examples, and you might have like 10 or 15 things, but the problem I think that a lot of people run into, is that they don't actually think through what they need to have in place in order to know with certainty that they can get great results. And if you know what you need to have in place, then sales becomes just a game of quantifying and qualifying. You're just quantifying what type of quantifying how much pain they're in, how much is actually costing them, and qualifying, you know, can you actually get them a result, and do you want to? So you're So it becomes so much easier when you understand with certainty that you can provide a certain outcome for a client. And then you will show up so much more confident for your sales conversations. And it's a matter of you qualifying whether they are a great fit for you, you know, adding $1 million to their business in 12 months, for example.
There's some great examples. And so I can imagine that some business owners would feel like they want to take these steps. They want to really understand the value that they're providing, maybe even change the type of clients that they're working with. But their challenge is they're already working 50, 60 hours a week. And they're wondering, well, how are they going to free up their time so they can actually focus on activities like this, which are really important in scaling their business?
Yeah, that's a really great point. And this is something that I discovered pretty early on when I started consulting that I had this great offer for people. I'll help you systematize your business. I'll help you, you know, all this great stuff. That was the earlier offer. That's my offer now is much better than that, but that was where we started. Right. And people would say no to me, even though they really wanted to do it. They were excited about it. But the reason why is because like, well, you know, Mandy, that sounds great and all, but like, I'm already working 60 hours a week. What am I supposed to do? Like, I'd have no more time to work on this. So I very quickly realized that I needed to solve that problem for them if I was to be successful at all in my business. So I developed what this system that I call the Find Time Now system. And it helps you find 10 or more extra hours per week. And you use that to actually grow the business. So I like all my clients to be spending that time on growth related tasks, not just freeing it up to, unless they're already if you're already working like 60, 70 hours a week, maybe you're actually using that time, to be working less and just be a lot more productive. So, there's some ways that you can do that. And if you're interested, we could actually talk more about like how to actually free up that time.
Absolutely. Let's do that. I know I have a personal interest in productivity and time management, but I know that some of our listeners would as well. And I just wanted to point out, I think you've just given a great example of how you solved the problem. You were selling coaching where people could scale their business, but they couldn't get results if they didn't have the time to actually implement what you were talking about. And so you created another product so that they could then get value. So I think you've given a great example of how you've done that in your own business as well.
Yeah. And I'm glad you pointed that out, because actually that is a really great way that you can look at your prospective client's biggest objection to working with you and find a way to solve that. And then you will remove a lot of the resistance to clients moving forward with you. So what's really been interesting is that this was a hard thing for me to do, to do the Find Time Now. I did a lot of testing for this, and it was personally very difficult for me because I have ADD. I haven't been diagnosed with it, but I'm certain I've got it. And I've had a difficult time managing time. I mean, I literally don't feel time passing in the same way other people do. So time management has always been a struggle for me. And over the years, I've developed some really great systems around it. But I didn't know how I was going to solve this for clients in such a quick way. So anyway, what I have discovered is a system that works for every client that I've ever worked with on this. In fact, I guarantee it now. It's become like one of the biggest things that like draw people in to want to work with me is that, and it's a qualifier too, because that they know that 10 hours extra a week, they know that that's worth hundreds of thousands of dollars to their business. For a less mature business owner, they don't realize the value of their time yet, and they might not even see the value of that. So it's a qualifier too, which is kind of interesting. So let me just kind of share what the generalizations I found with this. So there's four different things, and then plus the power hour we'll talk about. So what you want to do is do some time tracking, which is really fun, right? It's not. And track your time in 15-minute increments. And to really, what it does is it creates some painful awareness. And I call it the reality check. And do this for a few days and get really clear on how you're actually spending your time. And then I walk clients through a process for looking at, you know, what can we eliminate? What can we consolidate? like batch, do it all at once? What can we automate? So like with software or just a process, like a templates or things like that. And what can we delegate? And notice that I said delegate last, because you don't want to delegate something that should be eliminated. So now doing that, walking through that process, what it's going to do is there's going to be all sorts of ideas for what you can eliminate, consolidate, automate, and delegate. There's going to be tons of ideas for it. But you don't need to implement all of them. You only need to implement like one or two. And that will be plenty to get you 10 extra hours per week if you have a more established company. If you're like a startup, you're starting brand new, and I know most of your audience aren't, they're probably further along. But if you're a startup, you might really not even get it. But if you have an established business, like this thing works like nothing else. It's really pretty impressive. So you're going to find all these opportunities, and you're just going to be looking at, okay, what's the most painful, or what's the biggest energy drain? What's the biggest time suck? And the energy drain, so this isn't just about managing your time, but it's about managing your energy. And it's so important as a CEO to be able to manage your energy, because it's not necessarily about the amount of time that it takes you to like answer a bunch of dumb little emails, because it might only take like 5 minutes to answer some of those things, and it adds up to accumulation of maybe an hour a week. But the time drain of how it drains your energy when you're jumping back and forth to some of these tasks, and it just wears you out, and it makes every hour that your work significantly less effective. So that's why it's important to be looking at what are the things that are draining you the most. You remove those, and then you're going to be able to be much more effective with every hour. So that's how I look at it and prioritize.
I like that you've talked. Oh, sorry. You sound like
no, go for it. Go for it.
I was just going to point out, I like that you've talked about energy there as well as time, because every hour isn't equal. You could produce amazing work in 2 hours and then 5 hours when you're not feeling motivated, or you haven't managed your energy levels to be at your peak performance, the output might be less in those 5 hours. I think you've made an important distinction there.
Yeah. And the other part of it is that, I've personally experienced this too, where when you run into some capacity issues, sometimes it's not even a time capacity. It's an actual like bandwidth, like brain capacity, and you just can't add anymore. And really what that is it's from an accumulation of energy drains and doing things that you shouldn't be doing that your team should be handling, or doing things that you shouldn't be doing at all, like maybe excessive meetings or fulfilling requests that people ask you to do that you shouldn't be doing in the first place. You should just say no.
And you've mentioned teams there, and I'd like to move the conversation into managing staff. I know you've got some really great tips around that. And also that one of the main or major frustrations for service-based business owners is around building their team and being able to trust that their team members can do great work, and having the right people in the right seats doing what's required to scale the business. So what are your main tips, or how do you work with clients around building their teams?
Yeah, it's a big question. So I'm trying to think of the best way to go about it. And I was just kind of thinking about a breakthrough that a client had on just over the past, like just recently with his team. And there were some serious breakdowns. Like anyway, he was sharing this, but it makes me think about it, because he was just sharing this today in our leadership activation session. And I'm not going to say who it was, but this is a call with our whole tribe where people kind of share their breakthroughs and share kind of their breakdowns and get feedback on, you know, is this the right business name for a rebrand? And, you know, how should I handle this type of situation? So like when you're dealing with staff like this, you're really in a different place in your leadership, and having some support around you and like some